Welcome to the Race to Alaska podcast and episode lucky number 7. I'm coming to you today from the cold drizzle of Port Towns in Washington, home of the Start Line and the Northwest Maritime Center. Today, I am joined by Jen Vincent, who, as part of Team Fashionably Late, has now raced and completed Race to Alaska twice. Hey, Jen.
Hey, Jesse. I'm super happy to be here with you. This is lots of fun.
Super fun. I love hanging out with you every time we get to, so I'm really glad you're helping out with the podcast. In fact, I want to give a big shout out to the whole Team Fashionably Late. For those of you who don't know, Team Fashionably Late, they've been working behind the scenes quite a lot since their last race in 2022 to help other teams out. They made an app in Victoria so that all the racers knew what the heck they were doing up there. And even so far as lending your team's sailboat, the Fighting Trousers, to last year's team, Dacron and Denham.
Yeah, we just can't seem to step away from this awesome race. It's like a delightful whirlwind and all the tentacles have us grabbed in different ways.
Absolutely. So, hey, Fighting Trousers is actually up for sale, right?
Yeah, that is true. Our beautiful boat really needs to find a racing team.
It does need a racing team, and it can race. You know, it's done the race now twice, and with Fashionably Late in 2022, you made third place, very nearly Steak Knives.
Very nearly.
With Dacron and Denham, fourth place.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we'd love to see this boat keep on going. It's such a great Race to Alaska boat. It's got comfort and speed.
Jen, you want to give a shameless plug to your website so that if anyone wants to check it out, they can?
Absolutely. It would do my heart good to do that. Teamfashionablylate.ca.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, Jen, we're actually not here as yacht brokers. We're here to meet teams. So True. Let's do that. This week's first interview is a team that you talked to, Team Wicked Wiley Wildcat. And it's a soloist on what might be Race to Alaska's first cat boat.
Yes, I would love to hear if we are wrong about that. But we had a great conversation, Adam and I. He's a lovely person. And well, I'll let the podcast speak for itself. Adam Cove, it's a total pleasure to get a chance to talk with you in preparation for your R2AK 2024 campaign. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Jen. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. How are you doing?
Good, doing well. I actually spent most of today prepping the boat, so I'm kind of in the right mindset to jump on the podcast.
Awesome. What were you working on today?
Today, I was doing a couple different things. I was setting up kind of positioning for the rowing station on board, which is kind of tricky to get the right angles and positions, and then reinforcing some deck hardware with new backing plates on it.
Oh, wow. Great. So did you get out and were you able to practice any of your rowing yet or not quite?
So the boat is locked up in my garage right now, which is a great place to work on it. But I'll be, once we get the station kind of set up, we'll go ahead and bring it down to the water to test it out because it's definitely going to be a bit of trial and error.
Yeah, that's great. So where am I talking to you? Where are you?
So I am in Massachusetts right now. In South Dartmouth, not too far away from the water.
Are you glad to be working on your boat indoors right now?
Yes, it is good. I have another boat. It's outdoors right now, and it makes it much more challenging to tackle stuff. So the beauty of having a smaller boat was I could shove it right in the garage and be able to tackle.
Tell me a bit about your boat. She's not a huge one, hey?
No, 18 feet. She's a Marshall 18, also known as a Sanderling. And she's built by Marshall Marine, which is no more than a quarter mile down the road from here.
Oh, wow.
And what's kind of fun is my brother runs the yard there. And so it's neat interacting with him as well as the owner, Jeff Marshall. And they've been so supportive so far. And
they must be pretty excited.
Yeah, I don't believe a catboat's ever done the race before. You can correct me on that, but I think it's kind of neat to introduce it to this race, and it's just going to be a fun story for him too at the end of the day.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it has either, so that's pretty cool. What do you think are significant advantages for this boat for this race?
Well, judging by some of the other boats, like open catamarans, I'm definitely going to have a level of comfort beyond the others. Although it's only 18 feet long, it does have an 8'6" beam. So it's, and it has a cabin as well with two berths. One I'll transform and turn into gear stowage, but it means I can get out of the weather if it gets really nasty and hole up somewhere. Whereas some of the other boats are going to be a little more challenged Stay dry and warm and comfortable at times.
So you're looking for a comfy trip.
Yeah, I think if I wanted to go out and win, maybe I'd get a foiling kite board and just blast through things. But I think I'd miss so much of the beautiful scenery, and just, I mean, so much of this is about the experience as well. And while I think I can do well in the race, I don't think this is the boat that will win. We're talking about multi-hulls probably on that front, probably bigger trimarans. But this is a great boat for tackling the race because it is pretty stable. It's comfortable, and it does have quite a bit of sail area, even for the light air.
Although, there have been a number of years where the monohulls have won too. So,
Yeah, that's
it
right. I think
could be
even
anybody's
last year.
year.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Last couple of years. Well, that's really exciting. So, you got a rowing station. What made you choose rowing over pedal? This is always a big question.
Yeah, or a third option we're not even thinking of. It's I think that's what I love about the races. It's just you can be as innovative as you want. I was looking at the pedaling side, but one of the challenges with this boat is the boom is fairly low, so it would be a little bit harder to duck under the way. And I think the drive chain is just that much more challenging to figure out, especially because hanging off the back of this boat isn't really an option. It's too small. So it prevents more opportunities for leaks, breakages. And I think there's a huge advantage to going simple on everything. So if I do a sliding seat rowing station, I can still use my legs a fair amount and propel the boat. Plus, I'm rowing all winter and have been for quite a while. So that's good training. Dialed right into that.
Yeah, I see that you're a little bit of an advocate for non-motorized dinghies.
Yes. Yeah. My own dinghy is a rowing dinghy. I row with a group called the Gray Buzzards. We're out of Pope's Island, New Bedford, and we row whaleboats year round. Sometimes we have to break the ice to get out. It's a fantastic group, and I'm training with them all winter as I usually do. And even my big boat, my Luders 33, that was engineless for 3, 4 years. Eventually, I put an electric motor, but I don't use it that frequently, and it has a big sculling oar.
That sounds lovely. Yeah, it is so nice to not have to, start that big noisy, what we called our dinosaur peddler.
Yeah, exactly. And it kind of goes back to that simplicity side and just enjoying life while you're out there on the water.
And you've spent a fair bit of time going up and down the East Coast, hey?
I have, yeah. I have explored kind of to the Canadian border, heading up to Maine all along that coast. Home base is Buzzards Bay, the islands, the Vineyard, Nantucket, Cape Cod. But then I've gone offshore single-handed to all the way down the Caribbean, and explored that whole area as well.
Why R2AK? Why now?
Well, I was looking for the next challenge.
Ha.
I had wrapped up a trip. Let's see, it was about a year and a half ago coming back from the Caribbean. And I've done a number of Bermuda races, and that kind of would have been the usual go-to come June. We typically do it shorthanded. We'll have three, four people on board. We've done it fully crewed before too, but the shorthanded's more fun. And it was time to mix it up a little bit. And I've been looking at this race for a while, and I think it's just a perfect blend of kind of the challenges I wanted to seek out. And in terms of I love the current aspect of it, going through very challenging the beginning, varying weather, and the navigation side is really fun as well, because it's not open water is once you get offshore is pretty easy. You're just watching out for other boats. This provides a whole different aspect to it. So I
Have you
think it's
spent
just
any time in that water at all up here?
no, this is going to be my first time up there, which is another reason that pulled me into the race is I wanted to see the scenery up there and just kind of enjoy a new area. Cold water is unfamiliar, but West Coast up north like that certainly is.
And so how are you preparing for, you're looking at all the tidal charts and current maps, et cetera?
Yeah, I have just for kind of daydreaming and such, I jump into Navionics on my phone, kind of playing with it. But I'll admit I definitely need to do some more research and map all that out, even kind of looking as far as anchorages and such. But
Yeah,
I'll
so you're planning to pull over at night, eh?
Yeah. So I've downloaded buoy data too from the Canadian weather buoys, and my general strategy, because this boat is not a fast boat, I'll live around 4 to 5 knots most of the time. Maybe jump up a little bit higher if I'm lucky. And trying to fight a strong current just isn't going to happen. And I'm single handing. So in addition to maintaining the boat, it's really important that I maintain my own body through this. So making sure I get nourishment and sleep. So trying to row against the current just makes no sense. So or sail against it that strong. So what I'll be doing is pretty much having my off watch when the current's against me, at least to start. And so we'll just keep playing the current. So I will be going through the night if that's what it is, but it's a pretty short night anyway. But that'll let me get plenty of rest to start. I should be pulled over probably 10 hours a day. 9 hours a day, something like that. So there'll be plenty of sleep. Hopefully, if the bugs don't get me.
That sounds like a good strategy. And you got to watch out for the logs too, eh?
Yeah, certainly. One of the advantages of the Marshall 18 is this boat is really tough. It's solid fiberglass. So while the bears might be able to fight their way through some of the other boats, I think I stand a better chance in this one.
Well, that is good to hear. All right, so you're single handing. What does that look like for amusing yourself in the quiet spells? What are you going to do to keep your brain engaged?
Yeah, that's a great question. And honestly, I think one of the biggest challenges with single handing, especially once you get your experience on the water, sailing or rowing, that part becomes routine. And you're kind of used to facing those challenges. But you eventually start to hear all these crazy voices in your head. You name your autopilot, you're talking to inanimate objects. So the longest I've done has been 17 days alone at sea. So I'll be somewhere in that range or nearby for finishing. And it's a long time to be alone. So I've listened to podcasts, music. I've done a fair amount of writing in the past. I write for some of the sailing magazines, so I'll kind of prep articles and such underway. Certainly some photography. And I do have a Garmin inReach I bring with me on these sorts of trips. So at least I can text with friends and stay in touch with them. And while it's not as good as hearing real voices, which hopefully I can do here and there along the way, just to kind of stay sane, it certainly helps out a little bit.
It's true.
And plenty of books too. I read quite a bit when I'm doing these types of passages.
Like actual paper books?
Yes, paper books.
Wow.
I usually bring a Kindle too, but there's something about paper books that's just a little bit, I don't know, more tangible. I don't really like staring at screens if I don't have to.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. So there's, obviously a lovely community of tracker junkies and people along the course who really pay attention to this race, particularly the journeys of the solo racers. If one of them were to come out and deliver a delicious treat to you, what would that be? What would make your heart sing?
Oh, that would be amazing. I would not be able to thank them enough. And just to meet other people would be such a cool experience there. And I love how this race kind of pushes that a little bit. I think almost anything would be amazing at that point in time, but like a slice of pie or something like that would be fun, or kind of a nice warm home cooked meal, like a chicken pot pie or something. It's going through that race, my body's just going to be craving calories. So I mean, and anything is encouraging, and especially just seeing someone on the dock or along the way flag me down, that in itself is a lot of encouragement. So it'd really be tough to go wrong. I think, anything like that would be cool.
All right, well, that's a call out to all of the listeners who may be along the route to have a lookout for Wicked Wily Wildcats and maybe have some home-baked goods.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the push on
Absolutely,
that.
absolutely. Well, Adam, I hope you have an amazing adventure. It sounds like you are in a wonderful headspace getting ready for it. I'm sure you've got lots more ahead of you to be preparing, but I'll be seeing you on the docks in Victoria, and I look forward to meeting you in person. And I hope you have a great R2AK.
Yeah, thank you so much. Everyone's been so supportive to start ever since I had announced it, just from my local community, friends, family, and everyone from the race just seems just as welcoming. So I'm really excited to meet everyone in that crowd and have a fantastic race. So thanks so much.
You're absolutely welcome. Take care, Adam.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much.
There it is, a soloist on a catboat. If you don't know what a catboat is, I encourage you to do a Google. Now I'd like to take a minute to talk directly to you, race fans. That's right, you, Teresa, in your cubicle. Next week, an email will be landing in the inboxes of everyone signed up for the Race to Alaska email updates. And what you find inside may shock you. You may become elated. You may become something entirely different. But either way, you're going to need to make sure that you're on that email list. So go to r2ak.com, scroll all the way down to the bottom where the email list sign up lives. This is the same email list that's going to ensure that you're getting everything we cook up when race time is upon us.
Jesse, you spoke to a new team, didn't you?
I sure did. Yeah, I met up with Team Guardian Sailing, who are doing really cool stuff in the world of therapeutic sailing. They are a team of four. They've just gotten their hands on an especially bedazzled J24. So the first thing I think we should talk about is, let's just get straight to Guardian Sailing. That's your team name, but Guardian Sailing is more than just a Race to Alaska team. Michael, you're the founder of Guardian Sailing. What is it?
Guardian Sailing was kind of a brainchild I started in Afghanistan in 2015. When I was in the desert, all I could think about was sailing. So when I got home, I kind of worked with my supervisor, Roger Bailey, at the time for the City of Eugene Recreation Department, and told him about this nonprofit idea where we teach veterans how to race sailboats, and that works as a therapy because it has done pretty well for me prior to that deployment. And he's like, hey, the city's got the funds, we got the boats, we got the staff, let's do it with the city. So at that time, it wasn't reserved just for me, it was for everyone. So we put it in action, and it was a hit. Like, we had a full boat for many years until COVID hit us. So that was really great. So fast forward a little bit, and 2.5-3 years ago, I'm several years into coaching recovery for first responders and veterans. And I still wanted to add the sailing component so that the recreational space is both learning coping skills and how to deal with negative symptoms of PTSD and trauma, in addition to learning how to sail. And listening to some of your prior podcasts, I really identified with the therapeutic type of component that is sailing for you, the peace, the beauty, the serenity of being on the water, of sailing. So I thought of everything that I know and that everyone else knows, and then learning how to cognitively work with that and helping someone heal. Well, that does miracles, in my opinion. It's done wonders for me. So the catch for Guardian Sailing was to add the curriculum of learning coping mechanisms and healing. And then now we've combined sailing and a curriculum steeped in healing. And we're going to put that on the water. We're starting with veterans and first responders, because that's a space I've been in. I'm a veteran myself, space I've been in for quite some time. And then we'll eventually expand that to everyone. Once we get the details of the organization hammered and moving forward.
So we also have Emily, Joe, and Eric here. How did you get drawn into the Guardian Sailing world, or did you get drawn into the Michael world?
So Michael and I moved to Oregon in 2015, and that year started sailing with Michael. So we've been sailing on boats here and there ever since then. And so I'm actually one of the founding board members as well. So when he kicked off Guardian Sailing, he asked me to be part of it. And I have a background. I was a wildland firefighter, previous park ranger. I still work in the fire service as well. So I live in that world a lot and see very similar things that he has experienced with the military and veterans, very similar thing with fire service and law enforcement. So I immediately jumped to the opportunity and really, And then once again, I guess that gets us to Race to Alaska as well, because he keeps asking me to do things and I'm too stupid to say no.
How about you, Emily?
Yeah, I moved to Eugene around 2015 as well, and found a couple people while I was kayaking, sailing on the lake, and eventually ended up started racing And so I've raced against Michael and Eric for close to 7 years and just now started racing with Michael. Did a couple of, got out at Newport with him. And of course, he's a force of nature at the lake and super positive and always fun and always taking people on his boats. And yeah, so it's been a blast racing against the vet crew because they are solid, solid team. So it's been really fun to be a part of seeing you guys out there, and now to join the crew. He had asked me beginning of last summer if I wanted to go, and I had been up in Port Townsend 2 years ago and saw the boat building going on, and somebody was just replacing a Sitka spruce mast on a bigger ship, and I was just floored by it. And then I saw the posters, and I came back and I told you, and then a year later there you were asking me if I wanted to. So I couldn't say no. Yeah.
Jesse, I got the tattoo last year when I
was
So that was the intent. Like, I'm not going to let this lapse now. So once I got the chat, I was like, hey, everybody, it's going down.
And I guess last, Joe, you're here too.
Yeah, I kind of got wrangled into this crew of misfits through Emily. I met Emily a little over a decade ago when she and a really dear buddy of mine got married. And then we've kind of been in loose contact, and kind of I got to go to their wedding, which is a really beautiful affair. And then more recently, we went on a pack rafting trip in the Bob Marshall, and then kind of from then have been a little more closely connected and hanging out more. And Emily just reached out to me this winter and was like, through a text, and was like, hey, do you want to do a race to Alaska? And I had never heard of that. I have zero sailing experience. And I was like, absolutely, let's go. And then kind of shortly thereafter, we arranged a Zoom call and kind of talked about more specifics. And the more I learned, the more I was like, oh my goodness, how is this opportunity unfolding in front of me right now? Yeah, so I couldn't be more excited. And there's just a ton of overlap with my experience and what Guardian Sailing represents. And yeah, it feels really serendipitous in so many ways.
Yeah, sure. So you don't have a sailing background, but you are a Knowles instructor. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah.
Now, if listeners don't know, that's the National Outdoor Leadership School. Can you tell us what Knowles is?
Sure. It's a kind of, I mean, it's interesting because I've also worked in wilderness therapy. And so Knowles is kind of more just adventure, fun times, and teaching, using the outdoors to teach leadership as kind of like the main tagline. And then the beautiful thing about Knowles is there's a lot of freedom for Knowles instructors to bring their passions into the field. And for me, that's been a lot of mindfulness. That's been a really shaping force in my life. And then also through the wilderness therapy work I've done and realizing how transformational being in the outdoors can be. And that's a big part of, you know, like the camaraderie and teamwork that is instrumental in these wilderness expeditions, because that's what Noel's primary focus is. It's kind of remote wilderness expeditions. And yeah, just seeing the transformational power of that and knowing that that's so much informed by how we show up to the courses and what containers we're able to create. And again, that just ties into so much of what Michael's wanting to do with Guardian Sailing. And so it feels really amazing again to just have this opportunity kind of fall into my lap in so many ways.
You know, so I asked you what Knowles was, but I actually am a Knowles alum myself.
Nice.
I took a Knowles course a long, long time ago in Alaska, 30 days backpacking in the Chugach Range
very cool.
Paddling from Valdez to Whittier. It's an incredible organization. Yes. And that's what actually, it led me to becoming an Outward Bound instructor myself. Mm. It's all of the same cloth.
Yes.
Most certainly. It brings a lot of people into meaningful places.
My first experience with getting in the Inside Passage a little bit was on Knowles course. So
wow.
I did a semester Knowles course. We got to do a little bit of sailing up there.
Very good.
Yeah, it's
also a long, long time ago, but you know.
Yeah. It's a hell of a way to travel. It's a hell of a way to travel. And it makes like, would you, so Knowles, I think, Eric, if I remember your your resume correctly, you had a multi-element course, like a semester. And so you did some sailing, you did some kayaking. So your sailing race to Alaska, would there be any future where you'd also want to paddle it? Anybody in this group? Or is it just about the sailing?
I don't know.
With more time, like I would paddle it, not racing.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
What, you think paddlers can't win this thing? What are you talking about?
I am not putting it past any of them.
I think we'll have to worry about finishing this thing.
I'm more focusing on the not running through the Louvre bit.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it could depend on the year. It could be the year of no wind, and then we're going to sit there and hate our lives, you know?
Yeah, it could be that. So we got pedal drag.
Yeah, that brings me around to why. Not why are you doing it, but how are you doing it? There's teams that are sprinting. They're hunting for steak knives. They're hunting for money nailed to wood. But I don't know if you're looking for that. Is that what you're looking for? One of those carrots at the end of the stick? Or is there something else that looks like success at the end of this thing?
If we accidentally win some steak knives, like, that'd be pretty cool. that's not beyond the realm of impossibility, in my opinion. So, you know, there's that. I'll keep my fingers crossed for the steak knives. But as far as, like, just doing the race, it's more of an event and an adventure than it is a quote-unquote race, in my perspective. It's to spread awareness of not just what Guardian Sailing is, but what it has the possibility of becoming with other people. You know, mm-hmm. you've read the adventure resumes, and talking with each person here, you know, everyone has a unique skill set or sets of skills that they're bringing to the table here, which works for Guardian Sailing, but Guardian Sailing is kind of a subsidiary of a parent organization, which is Guardian Adventures, which is technically what we're registered as under a 501c3 with the IRS. And Guardian Adventures will host hiking and climbing expeditions. It'll have an overlanding component to it. Sea kayaking in general. So we're gonna add to the element of Guardian Adventures. So to help people from all walks of life, you know, maybe they don't like sailing or being on the water, but they sure like hiking, or they want mm-hmm. to learn how to climb, right? So we'll have something kind of for everybody in this space moving forward is the eventual goal. Obviously will take some time. But this is one of a logistical nightmare. So I figure if we start at the top, everything else is going to go pretty smooth down the road. So
that's a great way to think about it.
Yeah. Right. So we'll start at the pinnacle here with something that's near and dear to our hearts and something we've all kind of, you know, skill-wise have built to over time to be able to hop on a boat and do this. So yeah, it's about generating awareness. Maybe we make some fundraising along the way for the organization, which would be great. Allow us to buy a boat, and eventually we'd like to put that boat up in the Anacortes area perhaps, and then, you know, do those courses in and around mm-hmm. the San Juans, have a racing component, some sail clinics. And then run that boat up and down the West Coast visiting people. So there's a lot that we can get out of Race to Alaska that's more than just the race or the event itself.
So go ahead.
You know, your question of, you know, the steak knives and the money. And we had a conversation, you know, early on in the podcast, you're asking some people, what does success look like? What does failure look like? And those sorts of things. And, you know, anecdotally said winning steak knives would be great, right? But the idea of learning something about each other, learning something about ourselves, hopefully growing as individuals along the way, is part of the success. And I think that's one of the things to go after. And also, I mean, like I said, to be in one of the most beautiful places I think that exists in the world, mm-hmm. And to get to see it in a very different way than most people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes us elite, doesn't it? We would be elite.
You're
I like to
elite.
Say the thing. I think my favorite thing is that fewer people have finished Race to Alaska than climb Mount Everest each year.
Ooh.
That's elite.
That's a great metric.
Yeah. It may not be true. I may have made it up. So you have to double check it, but it seems accurate.
Hey, here's the secret. This top secret piece is we make everything up that you hear anyway, so it doesn't really matter. let's pivot for just a second. Before we started recording, Emily, you were so excited because apparently you just saw the boat for the very first time, which cracked me up.
Yes.
Tell us about
like
that.
The ice cream man's coming down the street and you think you're gonna miss him, that like part, just like, oh my. That was the closest I can describe the feeling of pulling. Yeah, because you literally got in like last night, right?
Yeah, night before last.
So
yeah.
he was basically coming from.
So none of us have seen the boat until 2 days ago, and it's with the middle
great.
Of February.
Gives me a lot of faith. That's wonderful. Can you tell us a few things about the boat?
Yeah. So the boat, it's a J24. And the reason we're racing a J24 is somebody's letting us use their J24.
That's a great reason.
So the boat is actually from Arizona, being loaned to us. Mm-hmm. And it's been used. Part of the other reason is that the boat already has been used as part of a veteran sailing program. Mm-hmm. You'll probably notice when people look at our pictures, when you see us on the race course, it's probably going to be the weirdest, brightest, funkiest looking boat out there. It was part of a healing art project, a veteran art mm-hmm. project. And so the entire thing is painted with imagery. So the boat looks really unique. And so it's kind of continuing that path of the history of this boat.
Yeah, in mm-hmm. the same tradition as the boat originated. You know, huge shout out to Victor Felice of Puller and Kites. He's at Lake Pleasant, Arizona. And he's just a great guy. He's a sailing master down there. He teaches a lot. He races a lot. Wonderful human being. He's well-connected in the sailing community with like Tom Emin and people up in the Pacific Northwest. I really like him a lot, and we got to talking. Hey, I got this race I want to do, and he's like, I got just the boat for you, and he sent me the picture of it, and I'm sure you see the images with all the symbolism all over it, right? It's got ribbons, and it's got shark, and it's got Poseidon, and it's got American flag with a gladiator mask in the front, and it's got a map of Iraq, it's got Panama, like it's got all this great history on the boat. And he hands me, when I pick up the boat a couple days ago, he hands me 5 gallons of paint. He says, this is what we use. Put your story on the boat. So nice. That was pretty kind of him to do. So he has a great tradition in helping other people with their goals and dreams. He assisted by giving Mermaid Rescue, which is one of his hot pink J24s that he had painted, to all women's Argentinian crew to do the J24 Worlds, I think last year, the year before last. So he's got a great tradition of helping people along the way in their endeavors. So he let me borrow the boat, and we brought it up here, and we're going to spread it around the Pacific Northwest and share the love.
So amazing. It may be starting out as a J24, but we have a couple of tricks up our sleeve as well.
Can you let us in on those tricks? You got some plans?
I mean, it's not going to all be J24 sails on it, because we want to be more flexible. That's probably the first way.
Yeah.
And then if the pedal drive works, it should be pretty cool. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Is the pedal drive something that you are engineering yourselves and has some special features?
Yes. So I'm building the whole thing. It's going to be, we're going to have two pedal drives. So dual pedal drives, forward facing. So the idea is two people can pedal, but two people sleep. Mm-hmm. There's some secret to that. I'm not going to let it go yet.
All right. I respect that.
But really trying to make it so that it's as flexible of a boat as we can get out of the platform we're starting with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You remember the movie One Crazy Summer with John Cusack, and they do the yacht race and they cut the back off of Ferrari 308 GT and throw it in the boat?
I'll pretend like I do.
Yeah, I was really hoping we get to do that. But when I heard about the whole no motor thing, well, pedal drives is what it is.
Uh-huh. But now I've also heard, people have, MIT professors and all sorts of other engineers working on their stuff. I drew some stuff out on a sheet of plywood. So,
I just banged screwdrivers together.
So you've got some work to do on the boat, it sounds like. You have to figure out what you're going to paint on there with that gallon of paint you got with the boat. Maybe that's afterwards. Do you have training plans between now and then to get out on the water together as a crew?
Yeah, you bet.
What's that look like?
Hopefully we'll get the boat wet a couple of times. Once, come together as crew, look at our sail plans, work on sail changes, and then get together again, put all the weight on the boat, do the same thing, work on some emergency situations, man overboard, how we are going to address those situations. So yeah, we plan on having at least 2 to 3 opportunities to come together as a team and practice on the boat before we actually get in the water up north.
We're going to, we thankfully actually have some decent opportunities around here. You know, current obviously being a major issue in the race. We thankfully have the Columbia River, which runs at 2 to 3 knots all the time. So not as extreme as what we'll see up north, but it's going to be a good beginning ground for those sorts of things. Allow us to get some longer distance overnights and that sort of thing as well, kind of in our local area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to park the boat. We're going to run a half marathon, come back to the boat, and then keep sailing. So that'll give us, you know, good preparation for the pedal drive system, I think.
Joe, I want to hear from you some more. You're coming from a person who plans a lot of outdoor expedition logistics and risk management. How are you thinking about this? What, when you assess the risk, what is at the top of your list?
I mean, I think the folks that I'm going out with is kind of the number one thing. And
they're the riskiest part of the thing.
Exactly. Greatest strength, greatest weakness, right? No, I think for me, there's a big part of, obviously, you know, like I've spent the most amount of time with Emily and just trust dearly in her capacity to both judge people's personality. And I think I know Emily well enough to say that she is not going to put herself in a risky situation and certainly wouldn't invite a loved one into a risky situation. And so I think I just have like full faith in her and in inviting me, and that despite my lack of sailing specific knowledge, that I will be an asset to this crew. And I think also I'm a really hard worker. And I think, you know, like the beautiful thing about Knowles is you can learn a lot of skills as an instructor coming to the organization. Kind of like, I wasn't a sea kayaker at all before I came to Knowles, and I've pursued that and become a sea kayaker. And so there are some pieces of being on the ocean that I'm familiar and really comfortable with. And then, so I'll be reading a bunch of books to kind of get savvy with sailing things. And then I also have the really tremendous good fortune of good buddies kind of sailing around the world right now, and has invited me to sail from New Zealand to Australia. And so that'll be in early April, we'll head over. And so it'll be nice to kind of have that as a starting point rather than just showing up kind of fresh in May and meeting the crew and then having to learn everything from total scratch.
I really love seeing a team that is so focused on their mission. You, you are certainly bringing in so much intention. I just interviewed another team, Roscoe Pickle Train, and I love Roscoe Pickle Train. They are, I've known Odin, captain that team for a long, long time, since he was a young person in a program that I was teaching, and they're incredible people. They are coming at this, I would say, from a different perspective. yeah, the intention you bring is really inspiring. And it makes Race to Alaska really feel like it's serving a lot of purposes. And Race to Alaska is really what people bring to it. So if you could get one piece of advice from the hive mind of all the past racers, what would you want to ask them? Nothing.
No, there's a lot of things. I mean,
I know. I'm like running through tactics and sleep and this.
I think the big thing for me is, when do you make the decision to rest? That's mine. You guys can go. Maybe
I'll find you the journey. I mean, you know, the ask to do Race to Alaska was, what, 6-8 months ago? And, you know, the journey's still going, and there's so many variables involved. We talked about this as a team, and one of my biggest fears was not making the start line. And I don't mean just not there at 5 a.m. on on June 9th, but like having the crew here to work on the boat together, being able to launch the boat. Do we get the documents in order to be able to spread the awareness for the organization? Are we able to get that part or this part? Will the pedal drive work? We'll be able to function together as a team, especially when we're exhausted, right? Every one of these components is like a starting line that we need to make and work towards. So, you know, there's a journey in between each variable there. And then you're doing the race, you know, and That I find particularly challenging. I find it fascinating, and I'm really curious how other people found that journey.
I'll add my piece to that. I think coming from the climbing world, I really seek out on-site opportunities to just like set off on this adventure that I don't know what it is I'm setting out on. I just know that it's going to be an adventure. And that's what I feel excited about for this race. Certainly getting to the starting line and everything that needs to happen to make that happen is of tremendous importance. But I think just the excitement that I feel for just this, the unknown and the unknowable that is adventuring on the ocean with a small crew of people is just like, whoa, like just, I mean, has me completely buzzing with excitement. And yeah, it's just super. And so I kind of wouldn't want to ask. Yeah, just like appreciate the collective wisdom and realize that that has been taken into account by the race organizers, and just, yeah, feel excited to go out there and see what we find.
It's really nice of you to think that we think things through here.
Yeah, I think I do. I'll add one comment just off the cuff here, unrelated, because I saw earlier when we were mentioning that we haven't seen our boat before, we've never been together before, and we're only going to sail three times before the race, the look of horror on your face. Mm-hmm. On why did your vetting crew let us in? But, you know, I think this is what for me, the preparation is half the excitement. Like the fact that I get to get this boat now and I have 3 months to make it go to Alaska, like that's super exciting. I love refitting boats. Mm-hmm. You know, Emily's been like crushing it on learning. And I think she even, you know, spent some money with you guys and taking a couple courses up there, you know, to fill in a few gaps in knowledge. And, you know, Joe, you know, says he doesn't have sailing experience, but he's got massive amount of adventure experience and time. And, you know, he's the only one of us who's actually been through Seymour Narrows on a fishing boat, you know? Mm-hmm. And I guess Michael adds some things too, you know, maybe some sailing ability, something like that, you know? But that's what's really exciting to me is that not a single one of us, I don't think right now, would say, I'm going to go to a race to Alaska by myself, especially not on the mm-hmm. J24 that we just got today.
Yeah,
but I have no doubt that collectively we're building up to what the team needs.
Yeah. You know, you heard that line before, there's a fine line between madness and genius. Well, I kind of compare the Vendée Globe Racers to that, right? Around the world alone, or even the Global Sail Challenge right now, which is happening. You know, there's definitely a fine line at some point. Yeah, you're totally mad out there doing what you're mm-hmm. doing. Other times, you know, everything just works and falls into place. And looking at like the Race to Alaska movie, right? And then one of the kayakers that was out there paddling, talking about getting 5 Big Macs and you should have got 6, right? And then the look on his face after paddling that far, I mean, that to me is nuts. That's madness to me. But I endeavor to do this as a team. And as far as the vetting crew, you know, I've done many national championship races with Eric on my Santana 20, and I've raced against Emily a whole bunch of times. But we've all raced together on the same class of boats, and there's not a situation that I wouldn't trust them in a heartbeat. And given Joe's background and experience and Emily's trust of him and his experience, I have every bit of confidence that we'll come together when it's needed the most.
Sounds to me like you will. And I think the fans are going to love you. I think that you're doing a really cool thing, and I'm really glad that we're able to hopefully boost your voice and get your mission out there. And if people want to go to your website, I believe it's guardiansailing.org.
Yes, that's it.
And they can learn more about you there.
Yep, they can follow along with our Race to Alaska project progress on Instagram, Facebook, all those social media type things. Maybe we'll let some secrets out about our pedal drives there. And but you have to go up there to watch them. How about that?
Hey, well, I appreciate y'all taking the time to talk to me today.
Thanks, Jesse.
Great, thank you very much.
Thanks a bunch.
What a great team. I can't wait to watch them in June. I can't wait to meet them in June.
I can't wait either. And I am really hoping that getting out on the water together 3 times as a team is going to be enough.
Me too. Well, it's going to be an adventure.
It sure is. All right, folks, that's it for this week. There is now exactly 1 month left in Race to Alaska 2024 application season. So if you are sitting on the fence, hemming and hawing, time is short. Keep your eyes out for next week's email, and we will see you at the next episode.
Race to Alaska is a project of the Northwest Maritime Center in Port Townsend, Washington. To learn about our other projects or how you can support them, please visit us online at nwmaritime.org.